Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting Podcast. My name's Sandy Fowler, and I am here again today with my co-host, and as she says, partner in crime, Judy Davis. And I am actually, the word for me for this week's topic is intrigued. And that's because it's centered around a saying that actually makes me crazy. And what we're going to be talking about today is it takes a village.
Sandy, I swear you kill me. Whenever you say it takes that it makes you crazy, I just have to laugh because for me, that saying of it takes a village brings me comfort and reminds me that as a parent, I'm not alone. You know, it just is this kind of warm blanket that I know I don't have to do it day in and day out.
That is so funny, Judy. And the funny thing about it is the concept, I mean, what it really means, I agree with you for different reasons. I think it's, you know, I could totally see why that brings you comfort to go, wow, I'm not in this alone. And I do believe it takes a village. Just, I don't know what it is. So I'm just going to ignore that saying for the moment. But I do think it takes a village. I've always said that, you know, we lost so much in our society when we lost our front porches and our sidewalks, when we got air conditioning. And people talk about technology. To me, the first huge problem with technology is actually air conditioning. Because it used to be that, you know, you'd go outside in the evening and you'd sit on your porch or you'd putter around the yard and you would talk and the kids would play up and down the block. And so you'd know your neighbors and, you know, my neighbors would yell at me if I did something stupid I wasn't supposed to be doing. And that was okay. That was where the villages started, you know, beyond immediate family. It went out into our neighborhoods. And that, so from that standpoint, I really do agree with you, Jude. I do agree that it takes a village.
And that is exactly why we have Janice Case with us today. Janice, our expert, she knows everything there is to know about kids, family, and culture and how those things all intertwine. She's an educator with over 20 years of experience, more than 20 years of experience in both the private and public school sectors. She has extensive public and private school experience that includes middle and high school principal. She was an assistant principal and a special education teacher, to name just a few of the things that she has done. Currently, she actually consults with educators and schools around the country, providing consulting services in a way that gives professional development to schools and school leaders nationwide. And Janice, I am excited you're here to help us understand what a modern day village looks like and how to create one that will actually help our kids get what they need. Thanks and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me, ladies. That was it's always a challenge to listen to people introduce you, right? Because it's that balance between not boring them to death, but helping folks see maybe you have a little bit of street cred as far as they're concerned. So hopefully you achieve that, Judy. Thank you for that. I loved your introduction and the discourse between the two of you as you began, because I think I'm going to fall somewhere in the middle, right? The first thing I'm going to do is acknowledge that the village is gone, right? So that village that Sandy said was kind of intriguing because it kind of gave her some anxiety is gone. And I think that's probably why that expression can be kind of a negative one for some folks, because they're disappointed or frustrated or pick an emotion about the fact that that village doesn't exist, not the one that we grew up with, at least. And you guys did a great job of describing it. And I appreciate your acknowledgement of some of the things that have kind of chipped away at it, right? And kind of lended themselves to us being here. On the flip side, the great thing is that the village can be resurrected, right? And it can be resurrected by us. I think the big difference that I want to focus on today is that the village as we knew it is gone because it doesn't happen automatically anymore. The big difference for parents today, and I think in educators as we partner together, is that we have to be deliberate about building our own village. And that is the message that as a principal, especially as a middle school and high school principal, that I would start each year with. As I had new sixth graders come into my middle school, and then after that, new ninth graders come into my high school, that was what we talked about with parents, was how to go about building your village for you and for your children.
Well, it's interesting. I just want to kind of step back a second, because one of the things that you touched on was that we don't automatically have this whole network and village. And what popped up in my head was how can we have that when our kids are so different now than we were? Their challenges are different. The way they look at things is different. The technology is different, like Sandy pointed out. And I just don't understand where our kids are at to be able to help them. So can you kind of dig in to give us a picture of what our kids are dealing with and where they're at?
Sure, of course. There's a lot that comes to mind there, Judy. So first and foremost, you again did a really nice job of identifying some of the differences, right, between the world that kids live in now versus what we grew up in. And that is a challenge for us as parents, just like it is for us as educators. We can't educate the way we were educated. We can't parent necessarily the way we were parented, because it is such a different experience for them. And I know you all work with lots of really wonderful people who acknowledge one of the primary differences is the sheer level of competition our kids feel from a very young age. Even from ages where we can't possibly think that they're considering the notion of competition, and how that impacts them. And as much as we play a role in that as parents, and certainly again as educators, one of the things that I have found in my work with kids at all ages is that the competition becomes more from each other than anything else. And I think we overlook that sometimes. I think we look to the adults as the villains, if you will, in the competition conversation. And again, I think all of us have own pieces of that. But I think that early on with their incredibly expansive network, because of obviously with social media, they have networks that are so much broader than we could have ever imagined, that competition comes in large part from each other. And it's not even a negative, I'm better than you are competition, as much as it's kind of this is the world I'm living in, this is what I'm doing, and then the comparisons they inwardly, if you will, make with each other and between one another. So I think that's a big part of what you're thinking about, Judy, is that's kind of how different they are. Now that said, I think parents have just so much, I'm going to use the word power, but in a very positive way, or control, because I think we feel helpless sometimes, but we really aren't. There's so much that we can do. And frankly, because of social media, yes, there's a lot of challenge that comes with social media, but there's also a lot of kind of good. It's the whole, you know, how you choose to use it for good or evil. When you choose to use it for good, it's amazing what it can do for you in terms of this notion of building your village.
So I'd like to actually, Janice, go before we start getting into, you know, what we can do besides social media.
Yeah.
What is different for our kids? Because yes, I get that. And I know that's a huge piece and we talk about that and everybody talks about that, but is there more that's different, or is it just the social media that's different for them?
I think I think Sandy, that their entire world is different now. And I walk a weird line, because I think their entire world is different. And that kind of, for me, comes mostly from this notion that our kids have more access to information in a day than people had in a lifetime 100 years ago, even maybe 50 years ago. So mm-hmm. Think in terms of having all of that level of information coming at you constantly throughout the course of a day and at a week and a month and a year. And that's not all social media. That is just by nature of the world we live in. I'm a big a reader of Tom Friedman's work around the notion of the world is flat and that used to be us. And this just general idea that take all their social media away, our kids still have so much access to information in ways that we never did. And I think that has a tremendous impact on your overall social and emotional well-being, as well as just your kind of ability to navigate the world, if you will, day in and day out.
So yeah, it's that they're spending so much energy even just like, because you use the word manage. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, so they have to manage all this coming at them. And I know, you know, I deal with that. And my solution is oftentimes just to shut it all off. You know, that's why I love camping, but I don't want to go there. So two big things that are different mm-hmm. are competition mm-hmm. and three things, competition, social media, and access to information. Are those kind of the big, say, the big four?
I would say they're the big four. And, you know, I could easily talk for quite a bit of time on any one of them, right? So, but yes, I think you've captured them well.
So I apologize. It was three. So it was competition. No, it was four. Competition, social media, and access to information. I can't count today. Oh my gosh. Somebody just, it's three.
It's kind of a little math. It's okay.
Social media and access to information. And I get the social media being different and, you know, and we talk on the Mighty Parenting Facebook page. We've talked in the show about social media. So I don't want to spend a lot of time in there as to what the problem is there. And we talked just a little about the information. I'm not sure that I get how their competition is different. I mean, I know when I was in school, you know, we were all competitive too, across the board, you know, grades and sports and this and that. How is it different for our kids, or is it just their thoughts about it that are different? And if so, what are those?
So I think what's really interesting about those three big areas is that they're not silos, right? And so I would assert that part of the way that this notion of competition is different for them than us ties into the social media and the access to information piece. So in other words, think about sitting in your elementary school. And you had 25 kids in your classroom, and maybe you had 500 kids in your school, depending on the type of community you lived in. That was it, right? That was your sphere of competition. So when you tie that notion to the other two blocks of these three blocks, that's where I think it shifts dramatically. So there's that piece. And then the second piece I'm going to throw out there that again becomes a topic that can be a much longer conversation is that. They are living in a world where everybody now knows it's not good enough to just compete with your neighbor or the kid down the street or the kid three grade levels above you in elementary school, right? Our kids are competing with kids from around the world. Mm-hmm. And again, that ties into the Friedman work. So when you think in terms of that, right, I just had to be good enough or better at something to get the spot in a school or the particular job. Again, as you're getting older, going back to elementary school, thinking in terms of those more immediate things. But our kids now, you know, we understand they're on a path where they will compete at a global level. And I think that does something to us as parents. And I think it does something to us as educators. Frankly, on some level, maybe not enough, because I don't necessarily think day to day the average person thinks about that enough. I think it translates day to day for the average person to making sure my kid gets a good seat in a good college, right? And again, when you go back to our generation, all the kids I was in my senior class with in high school weren't going to college. Maybe half of us were. So I wasn't even competing with all of them. I was only competing with the half who were going, right? So again, I guess maybe a really great way to capture all that, Sandy, is the sense of urgency is much greater, I think, because our kids have such a huge competition pool.
So really, I love that phrase.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to take your experience as a principal, because you're seeing all of this happen. And I love how you explained it. And how does that translate emotionally to our kids? How does it affect them on that level of their confidence and their ability to step out of their box to try something new?
Mm-hmm. I think, well, they're way out of their box, because I think one of the ways it translates is that from the moment our kids can like walk on their own, right? We have them in stuff. And that doesn't stop, right? It only gets more feverish the older they get. So I think that, so I don't think there's any lack of their capacity or ability to join stuff or take the step, because they don't really have much of a choice. And again, that ties to the parental sense of urgency that drives us to say, well, gosh, the kid across the street is in three sports. My kid's only in one sport. What does that mean? Right? So now suddenly my kid's going to be signed up for another sport. And I'm just sports one example, right? A different you know, activity, take on an instrument, whatever it is.
Or all of it.
I do
just do one thing. Got to do them all.
Well, Yeah, exactly. You got to do them all. And we're terrified as parents that we're not going to pick the right thing, which is partly why we throw everything at them, right? But we do it sometimes because we also want them to have a large selection, right? If we give them a lot of options, they're going to figure out what they want. And that's a wonderful tactic, by the way, at least in my opinion. But it's when we shift from here, try it all, let's see what you like, to no, really, you have to do this, right? I get that I'm dragging you kicking and screaming to cello practice, and yet you're still going to go do it, right? So to answer your question more directly, though, Judy, I think that we're seeing the impact, right? We're seeing the impact of kids who, you know, rates of depression that have skyrocketed. And it's not just kids, it's into adulthood, right? It follows them. It just doesn't magically disappear when they turn 18 and become a legal adult. So we're seeing it there. We're seeing it in kids who shut down. We're seeing it, you know, when you consider the rate at which schools now are truly dealing with the whole child and frankly, woefully not unprepared and not unwilling, because gosh, I can't think of more willing people than educators, but without the resources they need to successfully and effectively handle the social emotional turmoil that our kids are bringing to school today. So, again, I don't want to suggest that that's that one thing that's causing that, right? But it certainly is a contributing factor. So I think some of our kids are handling it just fine, just like some of us did when we went to school at a very different level. But unfortunately, right now, what we're seeing is that a much higher percentage of them end up getting to their teens feeling either invisible or feeling that nothing they do can be good enough, et cetera. And again, that is in part because look at the pool of people with whom they have to compare themselves, right? It's huge. You can always find 500 kids who are outperforming you, right? And that's a random number, but to give you the idea of how big it is, you can always find that. And a lot of our kids, I don't think, walk around going, gosh, I'm at the top. Even the kids at the top, by the way, don't see it for what it is.
It's interesting, Janice, because I remember thinking before, I have one of my kids is into music. Okay. And we'd talked about different things. And I said, you know, when you play piano, sing, or when you do that, or, you know, at church, why don't you sing out? And there's this, they're not good enough. And she certainly has a better voice than any of the other three of us in the family. And she has a much better understanding of the music itself to be able to follow and whatnot. But I thought about this before, and I thought even just with having, you know, television and larger communities and things, like you said, they see, you know, when you see professional artists every day, if you go back to when we were reading our Little House on the Prairie books or watching those shows, who did they have that they would see? You know, the 30 people who lived close enough to their house to actually get to. Yeah. And so that global concept is what really struck me today. That was a very new perspective to me. So I appreciate that. And again, I love that sense of urgency comment.
Absolutely.
That works well. So we kind of have an idea of what's going on. And as you said, schools, parents, everybody's trying so hard.
Yeah.
One of these key pieces we're missing is the village. Mm-hmm. So can you talk to us about that? You said that, you know, what we knew was gone, but we can create one.
Absolutely. So there are two ways that I talk with parents about this notion of building your own village, right? And I say it that way versus getting your village back or something that's a recovery, more of an empowering, right? Build your own village. And there are two things, I think, two critical pieces in the time that we have that I think are really important for parents to think about. Your kids get to middle school and they start to push you away, right? And that's totally normal. And sometimes we perhaps follow that push too heavily. In other words, we allow ourselves to be pushed away. And we chalk it up to, of course, they're adolescents. They don't want us around as much. And they don't. However, the big message I send to parents is that it's more important than ever to be present at that time. Right. I, of course, as an educator, focused on schools. And the comment I would consistently say to parents is that every time you step into your child's school, you send the message that what they do there is important. So staying away from your child's school can possibly send the opposite message. Right. But the big reason I push them into the schools is because if they're all going to the school, that's where they meet each other and understand and know each other. Right. It was like pulling teeth with some of my own kids to stay connected to their parents. It's one thing, their friends' parents. It's one thing when they grow up in a community and they go to elementary and middle and high school together. You get to know the parents really early in elementary school and you can keep those bonds. But as even in that scenario, as our kids get into middle and high school, their friends change, right? Because their likes and their interests change. And suddenly you've got this whole group of parents, none of whom you know. And so you have to ask yourself the question, who's going to be the person who kind of insists that we get to know each other, right? And there are small ways you do that, right? Small ways in that when your kids are going to spend time with friends that whose parents you don't know, you reach out to them and you say, and you insist on reaching out to them, of course, having their contact information, and you introduce yourself and you say, you know, I'm so-and-so's mom or dad. I'm really glad they're getting along and thanks for having her over. It doesn't have to be intense, but it has to be intentional, right? And your kids have to know that you're doing it. And the other kids have to know that you're doing it. And the parents have to know that you're doing it. And my experience is that all it takes is one parent to start to build those kinds of bridges for the other parents to go, oh, thank goodness, I thought I was the only one who felt like I should be talking to the parents. My kid says nobody's parents do that. I always love sitting in a room, right, an auditorium with about, you know, I don't know, 600 or 700 parents. And I say, raise your hand if your kids ever said nobody else's parents make them dot, 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 right? And of course, every hand in the room goes up. And I laugh and we laugh and I say, look around. Now raise your hand if you are a parent who makes their kid do dot, dot, dot. And most of the hands go up. See, you're not by yourself, right? And it kind of creates that opportunity for them to see that all the things they're thinking and feeling, the other parents in the room are as well. They just need somebody to say it out loud for the first time. That's mm-hmm. how you start to build your village in that way. The second way is by understanding that one of the things that social media has done to us as parents is taken away our permission to take care of each other's kids. Here's what I mean by that. Think about what you post, right? And, you know, I'm a woman in my mid to late 40s. I use Facebook. I have Instagram just to follow my own kids. And I have Snapchat for that same reason. But Facebook is where I do my stuff. As my kids say, it's for the old people. Okay, there I go in that category. But think about what you post and think about what the people around you post. And the fact of the matter is that when it comes to our children, we only post their successes, right? We post their triumphs. We brag because we're proud of them and we should. There's nothing wrong with that. And I'm not suggesting, by the way, to start posting all of your children's failures because that will have a very adverse effect. But what I am saying is that in that world, we have to acknowledge with each other that my kid's not perfect. So yes, I only brag online about what they do well, but behind social media, let me be very honest with you, my kid's not perfect. I'm going to wager a guess your kid's not perfect. I give you permission to tell me when you're aware that my kid's not being perfect. I would love to know because
I'm probably say that again. Janice, I need you to say that again. I give Absolutely. You permission.
I give you permission to tell me when my kid's not being perfect. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that a side effect of only ever seeing the good, because it's always what we see on social media, is that we don't feel comfortable approaching a parent when we know their kid's making bad choices. We don't feel comfortable being that person. Back in the day, the neighbor down the street saw you, they picked up the phone and called your mom, right? We don't do that anymore.
No, and we're afraid as parents. So I did a presentation for our business, Dacium, and during the Q&A part, one of the adults in the room, this is a small group of professionals in the healthcare industry, and they were aware of another teen, you know, one of their kids' friends, who was showing early warning signs of severe emotional problems. The kinds of warning signs that say, you know, this child could be thinking about suicide, if not now, in the next 6 months or year as they continue down this road. And that happens. But what really scared me is that this parent was saying, what do I even do? Is it okay to approach the other parent? And that's what hurt me a lot in there is, yes, one, the child, but two, that the parents, like you said, we are just so pushed back from each other that we don't even feel that it's okay to say, you know, I'm seeing this about your child, that they might be in trouble. And we're talking about life or death.
Yeah, absolutely. And likewise, Sandy, part of what goes hand in hand with that is we don't share when our own kids are struggling, right? I mean, beyond maybe that kind of immediate one or two really close friends who I tell everything to, it's as if we're afraid to because of the stigma that might come with that. And yet we know we're living in a world, as we talked about a bit ago, of the highest rate of depression and anxiety and all those pieces yes. in our kids ever before. So, which means that in a group of 20 kids, look around, parents, at least a half of them probably are suffering from something like that, right? Right. And we don't talk about it because we're afraid of the stigma that could be put on it.
Well, there's something else too here, Janice, that I want to get your opinion on, because so me, just as a person, I also don't have a tendency to throw up every one of my kids' successes on social media either. But I feel like, you know, once they're not babies anymore, it's like, mm-hmm. they're people. This is their life. These are, you know, this is their decision whether they want to put their life out on social media or not. Same as my husband or anyone else. So I'm not seeing for me a path to do that. Can you help me find another ground where I don't have to essentially be putting my child's difficulties out there in the news?
Absolutely.
Because the whole world can see this, you know? So can you help me find a middle ground?
Sandy, I'm so glad you said that, because I want to be very clear about this. I would never do that, right? I would never use social media for that purpose. I think it's perfectly fine to use social media as the place where we lift each other up and where we talk about the positive, and we just do that. I think that's totally fine. I'm saying that because of that, we have to be deliberate about giving each other permission outside of social media.
Outside of it. Okay.
I'm so glad you said that.
Okay.
Absolutely. Outside. I would never, and for all the reasons you've said, and because that becomes a history that can't be erased, right?
So exactly.
I think that, and frankly, a good rule of thumb is to ask your kid, right? Like before, and gosh knows, if I post a picture of one of my children without showing them the picture, you know, it's as if I've, you know, I don't even know what kind of crime I've committed. So anyway, so that's a good rule of thumb. If you ask yourself, would my kid be okay with this? And you know, in your head, the answer is no, positive or negative, then don't do it, right? Don't create another layer of stress and anxiety for them on top of what they have. But I am speaking that because of that world of social media, it becomes more incumbent on us to find the people that we've now started to build this village with and give each other permission to, like I said, tell each other when we see each other's kids not making good choices, or perhaps in some kind of a situation that could result in them being harmed or harming others, if you will.
So personal
outreach. But the way we do that, right, absolutely. But the way we do that is by being willing to talk about our own kids. Not necessarily their deep stuff, right? I wouldn't necessarily go tell you my kid has depression, for example, but mm-hmm. I might say, gosh, I'm really worried about the impact of blank. Or I might even simply say, my kid's not perfect. And I know that. And I know I don't see all the good they do. And I know I don't see all the bad they do. But if you become aware of something that you know a parent should know, please tell me and know that I'm not going to be upset with you. I'm not going to get defensive, etc. That's what I'm talking about.
And I love that.
I think that that's the key from everything that we've talked about today. The key seems to be that as parents, if we want a support network, then we have to be willing to be part of that network and actually be open to hearing that our children aren't perfect.
Exactly.
Be open to discussing the issues and problems in a moving forward empowering way. I think Absolutely. Too often as parents, we are judges first and support systems second. And as someone who's had, my son had attempted suicide, has had, you know, addiction with prescription meds, and now he's on the other side of it, continues to have all of the challenges that go with having a mental behavioral health challenges. But the more transparent I am, the less he sees it as his cross to bear. He yeah. knows that people know, so he isn't afraid to talk about it. And I don't know if it's a question, it's just this: if we want to create that network that you're talking about, one that is actually effective, not superficial, like so many of the things that I've been part of, probably you've been part of, our listeners have been part of, but if we want that true effective thing, then we need to be transparent. We need to build our villages using those two ways that you mentioned. And I know, Sandy, you're going to wrap us up.
I am, unfortunately, because I have I have questions, I have things I want to say and ideas, but we are beyond our time. So I just want to go back and make sure, Janice, that we got the key points. So first of all is, okay, we accept the village that we knew before is gone. However, we can build a new one. What we need to do is just be deliberate about that. But the reason that we need to do that is that our kids have a different mindset today. They're living in a different world. They're coming from a different place. The competition is totally different than anything we've experienced. It's a global level. They have access to more information than we've probably had in our lifetime. They'll get in a week or a year, they'll get more than we did in our lifetime. And then there's the whole world of social media and everything that happens there. And all of these things together in both the kids and the parents are creating this sense of urgency that they need to do more, be more to make sure that they're okay. And that takes a big emotional toll on our kids, a social and emotional toll. And so one of the things parents can do to help all of this is to build our own village. And that you said we have two key pieces of that. One is kind of this staying in their lives, staying in the school, which the big separation starts at middle school, gets amplified again at high school. In college, we should be stepping back, but we'll talk about that in another show, Jude. We got to talk about that, is how it's just different. It's not that we step back, it's that we step to the side. But in middle school, still step into the kids' school, show up, volunteer, just pop your head in for things, whatever that is. Try to continue that in whatever way you can in high school. It's not as, I've noticed, it's not as directly related to the kids, but we can still be there if we want. The other piece of that, the second thing, was to personally connect with parents, to understand that social media has taken away a parent's permission to take care of other people's kids. So we need to reach out outside of social media and talk to other parents and go, hey, you know, my kid's not perfect, or we're having a struggle. And you have to decide exactly what that line is. But just having that open and honest relationship, but telling people straight out, hey, I know my kid's not perfect. And if you see them doing something that you're afraid to tell me about, don't be afraid. I won't be upset. Did we get the high points there?
You got them. Absolutely. And I think those two things are really intertwined, because for me, not necessarily a standalone to be in the schools. Of course, I'm always going to be a proponent, but using being at your kid's school as a way to get to know who those parents are, that kind of builds the bridge then to being able to build those relationships you're talking about.
Exactly.
And so
I was just going to ask. So if I'm a parent sitting here going, yes, 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 where can I get more from you, Janice? Like, where can I hear you about you?
Oh, gosh. Well, that's a great question, Judy. Probably the best way, and I'm sure you all provide this, is my contact information directly. I've shifted in the last couple of years, and I'm doing work at a national level, but with a focus on schools, right? And doing what we have to do in schools to address some of the things that we're talking about. So away from my own kind of private consulting, if you will. So I think the best way, if folks are interested in talking with me, and I would love to do that, is just through my contact information, and then we'll make those arrangements.
Okay, great. We'll put that on our blog post and everything, so they'll have so they can...
MightyParentingPodcast.com. We'll have that right with your episode on there. So if you're listening through iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or wherever, just go to MightyParentingPodcast.com in Janice's show, and you will get that. So thank you so much. This was such great information, and everybody stay tuned for Real Talk right after this little message. Parenting is the toughest job you'll ever love. It's a common phrase because it's so true. And as the teen years roll around, and you start seeing changes in your child, and you may start wondering, what's going on? Are they okay? Is this normal? And again, as they move out of the house, go out on their own, go off to college, you see more changes. And sometimes the changes are perfectly normal. And sometimes they're an indication that your child's in over their head, that there are things going on that they can't handle. And the parents' worry and their concern is, how do I know the difference? Well, now there's a book that can tell you. It's Warning Signs, and it is a parenting guide to help you understand about those changes and to help you figure out if your child could be at risk for depression, addiction, or suicide.
The book will take you by the hand, walk you through that understanding, give you the confidence to be able to take the next step, to have a conversation or whatever it is that you need to do, and to give you some idea on some of the paths that you can follow. You can go to dacium.net to the store in the shop there and get your own copy.
Welcome back. You know, Sandy, I'm excited about today because typically our Real Talk segments dive into an issue or a topic that one of us has a little bit of an opinion about here and there. And so today I just kind of want to pivot because parenting can be a lot of fun. And I just want to throw in a topic that is something that we all think about and want to have some fun. And that's how to help our kids know when we're happy and proud of them, just a little reminder that we love them. And I know that you are really, really innovative when it comes to interacting with your kids, especially when they're away at college. I mean, I know, you know, you have to tell me what you do with your one daughter because she is a fanatic about mail. So tell me about that.
So, okay, my older one went off to school and she has a different way of connecting and interacting. And so when my younger one went away, I had already been kind of conditioned to actually be a little more standoffish than what most parents would do. Certainly way more than you, Jude. You know, I mean, I might talk to her, we might get a text once a week, we might talk to her every 2 or 3 weeks kind of a thing. Well, my other one went away, and I knew that would be different. You know, we would be more in touch. But I found out when I got in trouble that she loves mail. And I mean, I know we all like getting mail, but for her, that just made her feel really good. And it didn't matter what it was. So what I started doing is, yes, sometimes I would send her a card or write her a note. That's fun to do. I like to go down and find different cards, especially if I can find funny ones. I love to bring humor into their day because I don't need a big mushy message. The fact that I took the time to get an envelope and a stamp or a card or whatever tells them the mushy part. So I tend to find funny things. But then I just do things like I'll clip a cartoon that I saw in the paper, because we still actually get a physical paper. So I'll, you know, clip a cartoon, or I will even just take a sticky note. And there are these two little cartoon characters that I created when I was younger, when I was doodling. I'll just draw one of those guys on there and stick the sticky note in an envelope and mail it to her. And it just makes her feel good. It lets her know mom's thinking about her, mom loves her, and she doesn't have to look at an empty mailbox because that makes her feel sad. And then I do things like, you know, for Valentine's Day, I bought a Valentine's dish towel because she's in a campus apartment, and, you know, send that. Just not big, huge things, not things that take tons of time or tons of money. It's that little connection.
And I think that that's the thing. It's like, as our kids get older, when they're in their teen years, you know, they push us away. They want us, they want their independence. They want their own thing, but there's still, they still need that connection to us parents. And I feel like sometimes we have to get creative in that so that it breaks through all the text message that they're getting and all the information overload that they get. And doing something like you're saying, physically getting something in her mailbox bridges that gap and provides that, you know, for lack of a better word, that long distance hug, letting her know she you care.
And Judy, I'm going to interrupt you too, because you know, technology gets bashed a lot these days, especially, you know, with kids and issues. But back in the early days in the Mighty Parenting Facebook group, you had commented that you will send your kids little gifts that are funny. And I looked at the site that you had there, and they're hysterical. And that's, again, that little thing. Or I learned to use Snapchat, which...
Oh, I thought you said GIFs. I'm like, I don't send GIFs. You mean GIFs, like G-I-F, like on a text message. I got you. Okay.
So the tech can do that. You know, you can send a text message, or I believe you said you could learn to use Snapchat. But again, that's that funny piece, and, you know, it's keeping in touch. But I want to talk about things at home too. You know, I know exactly. I have a couple things I did like when they were in junior high and high school, or even when they're visiting home now, but you know, I'm creative in one way. You're more like crafty creative.
I am.
Like that outlet. Did you do stuff like that for your kids? Did that come into play at all?
In full confession, I did a better job when my husband was deployed. You know, for those of you on the line that don't know, I'm an active duty military spouse. And when I sent him care packages, I would automatically create multiple and send them to my kids. When he's home, I'm not as good as the crafty thing. But like this weekend, we crocheted these little scrubbies. And my kids are going to laugh when they see them because grandma was here and their grandma was here. So I made one and she made one. Hers are beautiful. Mine are a little sad looking. So they will laugh when they see them. But making those little craft things, the care packages, a shoebox that I wrap in paper and fill with confetti or whatever it is, the things that I enjoy.
No, not whatever. I want some of those other ideas because, you know, I don't think of it. I would never think of just even just a little tiny box. So you said just fill it with confetti, you know?
Right. So I like doing craft stuff gives me stress relief. And I know in one of our earlier shows, I think it was Dr. G said, get rid of things that you don't like to do.
That's connect episode with your kids, two. Right?
So I try and do craftiness because I love it to give to my kids because then it forces me to take that downtime. So it's kind of a win-win also. But I will crochet something. I tried knitting last year and sent stupid scarves that are ugly as anything, but they're beautiful in that they're from me. So it's like the yarn stuff has been my latest thing. Paper crafts, little cards. Trying to think of some of the other cookie stuff. I do a lot of baking, so I send homemade jellies and jams and things like that, mostly for my son. And Christmas is always a big one. I have to make boxes and boxes of cookies. I could probably just send him a gift card to go buy the ingredients for what I end up spending on mailing it. But, you know, it is what it is.
Well, it's about the thing from mom. And the food thing's interesting because that's one of the places I went when my kids were home is I would show them that I did food things for them. So it might be that I just got out my china for breakfast one day, not for any specific reason, or maybe it was the first day of school, or I knew they had a big test. And so it was going to be a tough day. I wanted them to have a little mom love, or like I said, for no reason. But when they got up and they just saw china sitting at their place, it made them feel good. Or you see these mostly for snack ideas for parents to take into the little kids' classrooms. Mm-hmm. But I would take the cookie cutter in, you know, take the little heart-shaped one because that's easy. You can do that for anything, you know, and I had them for when we used to make Valentine cookies and cut the heart shape in the pineapple or, you know, cut a little design, cut out a tiny little design in the middle of the apple ring or whatever. Or make you know, little fruit kebab for them. But just something like that, that is not a big deal. Even when they're older, they may laugh because it's kind of silly for mom to do little heart pancakes or whatever for, you know, a teenager. But it doesn't matter that they laughed. It matters that they know that you cared.
Right. And sometimes I think our kids like it when we're dorky. I do. You know, my kids will laugh. You know, now they're telling stories to their significant others. And my daughter, who has kids of her own, is telling stories of how dorky mom was for years and what I did. But I also see her doing things that I did. And I know you've done it too. But to write little messages on the steam in the bathroom mirror or...
Yeah. Or lipstick.
Well, lipstick is one of those things that it has bit me in the butt. Because I did it, and I couldn't get it off the mirror.
Are you serious?
Because I used a lip stain.
Oh, geez.
Lipstick. So, but it looked really pretty, the message, but it took me days and days of scrubbing to get off. So be careful what kind of lipstick you used. But, you know, all of those little things bring connection with our kids. And I think it's important to show it to our significant others as well. Because then our kids see us modeling that relationship and that connection and will bring that And now my kids send me little messages here and there, just an I love you text or thinking of you today or, you know, whatever. Do you see that happening? Yes. Reciprocating, right?
Yeah, they do. Like, you know, you said your daughter is doing for her kids what you did for her. Our kids learn best by watching what we do rather than what we say.
Exactly. And I know
what we have to do is cut this off, June. I'm sorry. You want to get one more thing in?
No, I was actually going to say I'm going to have to cut you off.
All right, you cut me off. Go ahead.
You know, it's just funny because I love what we're talking about. And I know that we're going to open up this because I know there's great ideas out there from our community. And so I want you to, if you're listening today, hop on over to the Facebook group, Mighty Parenting, and we will start a discussion in there about different ideas that you can do, and we'd love to hear what you have to say.
Yes, I need new ideas.
Yes, we need new ideas. And I know, Sandy, you want them to go straight to our website to sign up for something. What do you want them to sign up for?
I do. So if you go to mightyparentingpodcast.com, not only can you get the different episodes, you can see different links from our guests and resources and things. But on that page is a place where you can just pop in your email and you will get a notification every time there's a new episode. But when you do that, we also give you a little free gift from us. There's an inspirational bookmark and then just some really great parenting tips on what we found to be really one of the most important things you need to know. So pop on over there, just get that notification, and yeah, share your ideas with us on the Facebook group. And until next week, join Judy and myself again next week. But until then, enjoy becoming a mighty parent.
Bye.